Welcome to this midweek message. I'm Drew Gones. Today I have with me Nick Poole. We are continuing our look at characters, people in the Bible, and we are on a wee little man today. Right, Nick?
Correct.
Who would that wee little man be?
His name was Zacchaeus, and a wee little man was he.
Ooh, nice. So let's talk about Zacchaeus. And I like to do this, and you've probably picked up on it. Do you know what Zacchaeus means, his name means?
Oh, I don't.
It means pure or innocent. So
really?
Yeah, which doesn't necessarily go with our story that we'll get into today, but I don't know. I always like doing those. So let's start by, what do we know about Zacchaeus?
So the interesting thing is, like, and this is like the glaring neon sign on the side of the road at midnight, and it's hard to miss. He was a tax collector.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone knows Zacchaeus was a tax collector. He was the most hated person in the Jewish world. Like, they were despised. Mm-hmm. And for good reason. I mean, these guys would take more money than they needed, more money than they were required, but they had no accountability as long as they brought in the appropriate amount of tax per person.
Oh, yeah.
And I actually think it's really, it added a new flavor for me when I watched The Chosen, and they're like showing Matthew.
Oh, yeah.
And they're showing like how he interacted with the Romans and everything. And I went, wow, this puts in a whole new light for Zacchaeus.
Somebody I heard, we were trying to think of like a normal day example, and I couldn't think of one.
Politician.
So what I heard the reference to was the peacekeepers in Hunger Games. Like, they're from your district. They're your people, but they've sold out to the capital. Which is the other thing I think is super cool about Zacchaeus. He gets a descriptor that no one else does.
Really?
And it's not his shortness, but he is a chief tax collector. This is the only time in the Bible chief tax collector is used.
I've never noticed that.
So he may have even had people, tax collectors, under him. We villainize tax collectors, but then we're like, this is the chief tax collector. I don't know. So,
which might explain why he had the ability to go in, as we'll talk about later, his ability to pay people back four times what he owed them.
Oh, yeah.
So if he was the chief tax collector, he was probably raking in benefits from everyone underneath him.
I read something. Jericho was like an extremely wealthy area. So if it was wealthy and he was making money off of that, like he would have been wealthy. The other thing that I missed until we started preparing for this, he was a son of Abraham.
Mm-hmm. And see, I think this is a keynote that people often forget, because a lot of people like to go in there like, you know, tax collectors were sinners that were hated and da 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 da.
He is referred to as a sinner.
Yeah. He is. He absolutely is. But what I think is important there is they forget that these men and women who were declared sinners, in my sermon that I'll be doing on August 2nd,
nice,
I'm going to be talking about
plug.
The prostitute. And everyone.
The prostitute?
Huh?
Which prostitute?
You'll find out on October 2nd.
Okay.
But every time we talk about these sinners in these contexts, we forget that these people knew all of these stories.
Mm-hmm.
They knew the stories. They knew the prophecies. They knew everything that was supposed to come with the coming Messiah. And they were very educated people. Him probably more than anyone else, being a chief tax collector, because he was affluent. He had the ability to do this, which also means he had spare time to go to like the synagogue and listen to rabbis and hear these things. Not to mention it was just ingrained in their culture.
Oh, yeah.
So there's a lot of things that we can take away to say he was probably very well versed in scripture. He wasn't just some low life thug that ran around stealing from the rich.
Is low life a play on his height?
I love it. But no, it's fascinating because everyone loves to just slap a label on it and then walk away without understanding the background of where those people actually come from.
That's kind of what I like the cultural background studies Bible, because I get in rabbit holes, and you know this. So I was like, I wonder how tall he was. We don't know, but do you have a take on, do you think he was a little person, or do you think he was just a short man?
I think with how it's described, I think they said I think one thing that I said that he was just below average.
Okay. You know what the average was for that time?
I think it was around, what, 5 feet or less?
Yeah, 5'1 to 5'7 was the average height. So I'm like, that's all short. Yeah. I mean, but if he is on the bottom end of that, because the other, again, rabbit hole that I got into was little people in this day were not treated kindly. I don't know how else. I mean, it was a rough life for little people, but he exceeded that, not exceeded, but he didn't live into that, if that was the case. So go on with the story. What does Zacchaeus do? What's his action?
So what's really interesting is, again, I think this is why it's important not to just slap a sinner label on Zacchaeus and just walk away and think, oh, he just hears about some celebrity coming through and he just wants to see him. I don't think that was the case. I guarantee you, up to this point, because we're looking in Luke 19, that is 19 chapters worth of buildup here. That's 19 chapters, that's years where these stories have permeated their culture and gotten around. And I guarantee you, with someone like him being as well-connected as I'm sure he was, he has heard stories about Jesus. And he has heard the whispers of who he might be and what he's here to do and all these other things. So when he hears Jesus is coming to Jericho, it isn't just a vain curiosity. It is I want to see what everyone is talking about. I want to see this.
Is that fair to say?
I would almost think so. Yeah.
That's and I agree with that too, because again, we're in the 19th chapter of Luke today, if you wanted to read along, but we know what's coming right after that, like shortly after this. And my application piece kind of we'll talk about that a little bit more. So Zacchaeus wants to see Jesus. We don't necessarily know that he wants to talk to him. He just wants to see him. Get up right in this tree to see Jesus. And then Jesus comes. So what happens next?
And I love this. It says, so he ran ahead and climbed a sycamore fig tree to see him, since Jesus was coming that way, in verse 4. Verse 5, it says, when Jesus reached the spot, he looked up and said to him, Zacchaeus, come down immediately. I must stay at your house today. There's some really big things that happened in this moment.
You know what? I had glanced over immediately, and not until I heard you read it with that inflection. Like, it didn't sit with me. What sat with me was, I must, like, and so keep going. I like where you're going.
I mean, there's that immediately, I must. Mm-hmm. And I think, and again, in these instances, especially where I end up in my application, you can fall in one of the two camps of Arminianism or Calvinism of, you know,
whoa.
I know, like there's a lot of like really weird, like rabbit holes you can jump into.
I see where you're
because it's
there.
Like, well, I know what you can do and I know where this is going to go. And well, you're going to go to, I'm going to stay at your house, period. But I fall more in the Christ knew how the dominoes were going to fall, not necessarily that he pushed them in that way. Because I still think in this moment that Zacchaeus had the choice of whether to let Jesus come in or not. Because I think if you see in verse 6, so he came down at once and welcomed him gladly. That I think that's a big key for him.
And I think I do think there's probably a lot in that. I also would say that the culture of this day was like you house people, like you, like if they came by, you're like, come in for dinner and do this, where now it's not quite that climate or culture.
And even more so with this, you're talking about someone like Zacchaeus, who was probably, again, hated, despised, probably didn't have too much of a family life just because of what surrounded him. It would not surprise me if he was married, had a family, but that connection was still very strained because of his cultural status. So whenever someone wanted to come to his house, he welcomed them, and then he welcomed them gladly. Yeah. Which I think is a huge thing. And I love the people's response, because I'm going, this is exactly how I see so many Christians responding to these things.
Muttering,
and look, he's going to go with this sinner. I can't believe that. Mm. And I'm like, that is exactly where we are supposed to be.
It's not the healthy that need a doctor. It's my takeaway is that while he's on this mission, He's doing what he's supposed to, and then the muttering comes. Mm-hmm. It doesn't defer him. It doesn't knock him off his mission. He says, this is what we're doing. I don't know. That's kind of, I like that piece of it. The other thing I had never thought about before, and I don't know if you have. So this, the Cultural Studies Bible says that the hike to Jericho was a 17-mile uphill journey. So a long day's walk. It was extensive. The practical side of Jesus here, there probably aren't many people in town that can house Jesus and this whole entourage. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of cool to think of, like, there's a practical sense of this, too, of, like, Zacchaeus' house can fit us all.
Oh, yeah.
And so I had never thought about that until I read that, and it's like they needed a spot that could house them because of the journey. So I thought that was pretty cool.
I'm going to have to pick up one of those Bibles. That's a really, really interesting point I've never really thought about.
I'm a big fan, so.
So for me, I think this is really cool because a lot of people, again, you read the scripture, you tell the stories in kids' ministry, youth ministry, whatever, even on the stage, sometimes at the podium, and you're telling the story of Zacchaeus, and you go from Zacchaeus was a wee little man, he went down, invited Christ in his house, and then boom, he was saved.
Boom.
What I love and what I hate about this story is it doesn't give any indicator of the amount of time Christ was in there with Zacchaeus talking to him. It doesn't indicate what they talked about. It doesn't indicate anything at that moment, which makes me think the author was not privy to this conversation.
Okay.
Because, I mean, I got to look at it from, again, you've got Zacchaeus, who's a chief tax collector, who is over all these people. He's a very proud person and probably private.
Yeah.
So it was probably just Jesus and Zacchaeus having this conversation one-on-one. Which I think is a powerful thing for us to understand.
That's a good point.
Because a lot of times we think these public spectacles of people coming to Christ is like this huge moment. It does not indicate of how much time Christ spent with Zacchaeus there. It could have been a few hours. It could have been days.
Yeah.
But I think here's my mind-blowing statement with Zacchaeus. And the time that Christ was with him, Zacchaeus stood up and said to the Lord in verse 8, "Look, Lord, here and now I give half of my possessions to the poor, and if I have cheated anybody out of anything, I will pay back four times the amount." Whoo!
Oh, yeah.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
But here's the important thing. So you've already hit on this once. Jericho was already a wealthy city. He is going to go back and give this to the poor. And he is going to give it to the people he's cheated out of money, right? Here's the important thing here. We always focus in on the impact that it made on Zacchaeus, which is huge. But in this moment in time with Zacchaeus, the work that Christ did with him, the conversation that they had such an impact on one singular person. It ended up having a ripple effect throughout that entire economy.
Mm-hmm.
Think about how that transfer of wealth went from one person and it just went and hit Jericho like a brick wall.
Yeah.
No pun intended with
Jericho. Yeah. Brick wall. Got it. I kind of like that too. Cause we look at this in context. The chapter before is Luke 18 and Jesus heals two blind people, on the way. But then there's this exchange with the rich young ruler. And what's the rich young ruler's response is not Zacchaeus' response.
He put his head down and turns away.
it's very important to look at this. At some point in time, we have to choose to. We can either turn towards Jesus and do what he asks us to, or we can be like the rich young ruler. Because I think those are similar stories here. They just chose completely different paths.
See, I think if you read a lot in Luke, and I'm seeing this more and more the more I get into it, which again, be preaching out of this October 2nd, you see Luke working with a lot of compare and contrasting. You know, here's a guy with this problem, here's a guy with this problem, and they react two very different ways. Hmm. So in again, I don't want to go too far into it, but you see two debtors. One owes a lot of money, and then another one owes a little. And the way that they react when they're both forgiven is two very, very different responses.
Oh, yeah.
Which, again, we'll get into later.
Okay.
But I really cannot harp on this enough. Everyone wrote Zacchaeus off, just completely wrote him off as a lost cause. But because one person took the time to see his value as a person and love him and spend time with him and go to his house, it changed so much of that culture in a singular moment. And we've got to understand that in today's culture, it's not that different.
Yeah, we can be Zacchaeus. Our impact on, or we can be Jesus and to a Zacchaeus. And then we're asked to be, we're called to be, so...
And I think if we don't, we see the reverse side of that. Mm. We don't see anything change. We have to be willing to come out of our comfort zones. We've got to be willing to go to the people that are written off, the people that are considered lost causes. Mm. And we've got to be the ones that are willing to say they're not.
Even when the crowd begins to murder.
Yeah. Murder. They do that later.
Yeah, yeah. Gosh, spoiler alert. Man, that was awesome. That was good. So thank you for your time today. If you're out there, thanks for listening. Stay connected, stay encouraged, and God bless.